Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program Number 702, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This is being recorded on January 23rd of the year 2010. We're going to plunge right back in, and we're going to take a look at the boiling stew that is spilling out all over America, and that Barack Obama is, well, he's going to have to try to clean it up. I think it's way beyond cleaning up. Surprise, surprise, the militia movement is building once again. I noted in For the Record 699 that Norm Olson, Timothy McVeigh's associate in the Michigan militia, has now moved to Alaska, stomping ground of Sal Moose Palin, and is basically working, as it figures to be working with the American Independence Party, for whom, the Alaskan Independence Party, excuse me, for whom Sarah Palin is essentially a cat's paw. It's not only a secessionist, overtly secessionist party, but one that is a correspondent party of Nazi and white supremacist groups like Aryan Nations and others. For the Record 652 goes into that in a big way, and also not surprisingly that we find some connections, internet and otherwise, between the Alaskan Independence Party and groups like the UNPO and others looking to break up the United States. This is an article from MSNBC.com from November 20th of 2009. Militia movement resurfaces across U.S. Resurgence in part coincides with the arrival of the Obama administration. I've noted in past broadcasts that there were a bunch of Nazis and white supremacist, quote, lone nuts, unquote, shooting people in various ways and in various places, basically manifesting the leaderless resistance strategy articulated by Louis Beam, a former David Duke associate, back in what he may have articulated in the late 80s. It really sort of gathered steam in the 90s. I would also note that we've had a bunch of quote, lone jihadists, unquote, sort of a manifesting of what might be thought of as sort of a leaderless jihad concept at the same time, basically heating it up for Obama. In this article, and skipping down, Norm Olson, again, leader of the Michigan militia, mentor to Timothy McVeigh, and now up in Palin land, Alaska, and undoubtedly will be working with the Alaskan Independence Party. It's the response to fear, Olson says. Olson lets that sink in. Then he adds, quote, the federal government can roll into your driveway in the middle of the night and snatch you up and take you away and you'll never be seen again, unquote. Well, funny, but the federal government hasn't done that to people like Norm Olson and the others. They're still very much around, and they haven't got snatched up in the middle of the night. Not, I mean, the federal government, there are elements of it, can kill you, which is what they sometimes do. At this point, though, again, the United States is really more of a marketing concept than a nation state. And in my opinion, now, the cross between a whorehouse and a theme park. And really, there really is no more America. Note here, though, that the militia movement, sort of populist, I would not characterize all of them as fascist necessarily, but a lot of them are, and they are misinformed. But note that they are basically sounding the same theme that the Republicans are sounding. We don't want big government. No more big government. Well, we ain't got big government, in fact, and we're going to have a whole lot less of big government with the new election law decision handed down by the Republican-stacked Supreme Court last week, which now corporations, including, by the way, foreign corporations, are going to be able to contribute to American campaigns. It basically, that is the swan song for what's left of American democracy. But note that the militia movement and similar elements of this type are sounding the same theme as the Republicans, anti-big government. And also note that they've been able to generate considerable sympathy in the so-called progressive sector, at this point about as ignorant as anybody gets. And so watch that one. Watch the degree of overlap between these, quote, anti-government elements and the worst sort of big government elements, namely the Republicans and their corporate sponsors and underwriters. There are some programs, one a six-part For the Record series, maybe eight parts off the top of my head, called Specialized Knowledge and Abilities. And also I would draw people's attention to a lecture about the militia movement. And I believe the the formal title of the lecture is The Militia Movement, Enemy or Pawn of the State, and it goes into some of the connections between the government and the intelligence community and fascist elements in those, and elements which ultimately have metamorphosed into what is today the militia movement. I mean, Sarah Palin is part of the government and wanted to be part of the federal government. Keep an eye on her, because I think she may very well have been tabbed by the underground Reich to be the Gorbachev of America. People say, well, she couldn't be president. Yeah? Stick around after what's left of the economy collapses, and if there's a terrorist incident using weapons of mass destruction, that will certainly collapse. What is left of the world's equity markets? God forbid, but we're talking about earthquakes. We're due for one in California. And who knows? When the big one strikes L.A. and or the Bay Area, that will collapse what's left of the California economy, which will collapse what's left of the U.S. economy, which will collapse the global economy. And it's too bad, but we should have been stockpiling money to try to take care of that. But, of course, there are no more funds to stockpile, are there? We are bankrupt. California's bankrupt. America's bankrupt. And philosophically and intellectually, an awful lot of the elements in this country are bankrupt, such as the, quote, militia movement, unquote. Returning to this MSNBC article, if the words sound familiar, there is good reason. It is rhetoric that was typical of the so-called patriot movement of the 1990s amid similar circumstances. A Democrat, Bill Clinton, was in office. There was heightened interest in gun control legislation. Veterans were returning from the first Gulf War. Elaborate conspiracy theories were spreading. Today's troubled economy and the perception that other countries are rising in influence might also be fueling activity among white supremacist and militia groups, according to an intelligence assessment by the Federal Department of Homeland Security. A significant difference this time, according to the April analysis, is that the nation has its first black president. Right-wing extremists, the report says, are harnessing this historical election as a recruitment tool. Indeed. So, and of course, we've always got people saying, well, this is typical about what happens when you start listening to conspiracy theories. Just sort of a hallmark of a failed society. There are a lot of crazy conspiracy theories around it, and the militia crowd, and a lot of the people in the so-called progressive sector as well are touting some of the wackiest. But sadly, people like yours truly and the late Jim Garrison and others get tarred with the same brush. And, this is how societies fail. Imagine now, by the way, I've spoken in the past about the UNPO, about secessionist movements among various groups ranging from Native Hawaiians, the Lakota in the Plains States, which whose claimed territory also happens to fall on top of the Bakken Formation, which could be of great significance for the energy future of the United States. If, in fact, some of my worst fears about this country or what's left of it come true and it's bankrupt, and people talk about martial law. Same thing with the militia, with martial law, martial law, martial law, martial law. With what troops? With what military? The troops are all overseas. And among the many victims of this, just the foul government we've had the last 8 years, and really the failure of American citizenship, frankly, are the military themselves. The military should absolutely be counted among the victims of the Bush-Cheney danse macabre. And with what troops are they going to enforce martial law? We haven't got enough troops to maintain martial law, and the poor troops that we do have been exhausted and subjected to multiple tours in counterinsurgency campaigns, which is the most brutal form of warfare. Well, not the most brutal, but a very brutal, psychologically grueling form of warfare. And who's going to do that? Might very well be, and this is one of the points of the lecture, the militia movement, enemy or pawn of the state. The real jackbooted stormtroopers of the New World Order, as the militia folks of the 1990s talked about it, are going to be, ta-da, the militias themselves. And in fact, the martial law contingency plans that were developed by Oliver North and company as part of the counter-terror planning under the Reagan administration called for the deputization of paramilitary right-wing groups to act as federal agents in the event of any one of a number of catastrophes. So a lot of these very same militia groups that are talking against the government are going to be deputized, and they will turn out to be the very jackbooted stormtroopers of the New World Order that they fear. problem is, and I'm not being cynical about the individuals in question, when you don't get, when the educational system does not do its job, when the media do not do their jobs, and the educational system has not done its job, and the media have not done theirs, and when the political system doesn't do its job, basically when people fail, they're stuck with the product of the failure. When people have been misinformed by a bad educational system and a corrupt media establishment, and when they haven't even been taught to think, let alone process information accurately, how can they know the truth? That sort of brings me back to square one. That's why I do these shows. That's why I have sort of my own mini radio network and the absolute best website for anti-fascist information. More about the burgeoning militia movement. Oh, I jumped tracks. I'm rambling a bit here, of course. But just imagine that the Lakota, for example, some elements of whom are taking military training, and the Hawaiians and others, all these independence groups declare independence from the United States. You know, who's going to be around to say otherwise? That's why I think it's a very real possibility. The U.S. is going to go the way of the former Soviet Union, and I think that Sarah Palin may very well have been tabbed by the underground Reich to be the Gorbachev of America, to basically preside over the dismemberment of America. That sounds far-fetched. Well, in the event of any one of a number of things, think earthquake in California, think WMD terrorist incident, economic catastrophe, ecological catastrophe, all of which are looming in the wings, folks. Not such a remote possibility. I could very easily see Sarah Palin presiding over a secessionist United States or disunited States. And indeed, this sounded wacky to people when I first started talking about it back in 2006. Now we're seeing op-ed pieces in the Wall Street Journal advocating just such a thing. The governor of Texas has not ruled out secession. Not such a crazy thing anymore. But more about, just imagine in that eventuality, who's going to stop people like this? From the TPM Muckraker site, a guy named Justin Elliott penned the following: Montana group demands local leaders boot feds, form militia, protect guns. A group of nearly 200 extremely concerned citizens, unquote, in a small Montana county are demanding that local leaders fill out a questionnaire, unquote, pledging to form a local militia, prohibit mandatory vaccinations, boot the EPA out of town, allow citizens to bear any type of gun, and require federal government employees to get written approval before approaching, quote, any citizen, unquote. Keep your eyes peeled on the so-called Freemen movement. That is an outgrowth of many of the, it's basically an outgrowth of underground Reich activity. They don't want to have driver's licenses or anything else. But in the event that things continue as they are, who's going to stop these people? And when placed in concert with other secessionist elements, such as those that are championed by the UNPO, be interesting to see what happens. And again, some of these folks have military training. Also from the TPM Muckraker site, former Marine with ties to right-wing movements charged with child rape and possessing grenade launcher. Reads, it's by Zachary Roth, 122-2010. An ex-military man with ties to the Tea Party and militia movements has been charged in separate complaints with raping a minor and with possessing an unregistered grenade launcher. Charles Dyer, a former U.S. Marine who served in Iraq, was arrested January 12th in Oklahoma on the rape charge. A child had told sexual abuse experts about a January 2nd incident at Dyer's homes. But while sheriff's deputies were at Dyer's home making the arrest, according to court documents, they found several firearms and what they believed to be a Colt M203 40mm grenade launcher. When they searched a national crime database, the deputies found that the grenade launcher was one of three stolen from a military base at Fort Irwin, California, in 2006. According to an affidavit, Dyer told law enforcement that he had received the grenade launcher, quote, from his best friend who gave it to him while Dyer was stationed in California with the Marine Corps. And he's associated with something called the Oath Keepers, which is a militia, quasi-militia type group. Again, the program specialized knowledge and abilities would be useful in this context. And also, the lecture, the militia movement, enemy or pawn of the state. Both are available for download for free on the Spitfire website. Please use them. Looking ahead to the 2012 election, they're already basically, things are starting to take shape. One of the most severe hallmarks of populist ignorance in this country has been the relative acceptance by a lot of people of Ron Paul. Ron Paul is a Texas congressman who has garnered considerable support in the so-called progressive sector. Basically, the guy is, quote, anti-imperialist, unquote. Who's pro-imperialist, right? And he's spoken out against American military intervention in Iraq, which is in and of itself a good thing, and has also advocated the legalization of marijuana, which will resonate very nicely with the so-called progressive sector. By the way, I think that would be a good way to help balance our books as well, save money on law enforcement, save money on corrections, tax it, help to reduce the deficits, but don't hold your breath on that one, not even if you've been inhaling some marijuana. The fact of the matter is that Ron Paul is a bow wow. He has publicly stated in one of his publications, publicly stated that Abraham Lincoln made a mistake in freeing the slaves, and has advocated the killing of gay people, but he's very effectively managed to deflect this. And of course, the so-called progressive sector, the controlled demo fans, have embraced this character. Their research is non-existent, and they wouldn't overturn a fallen leaf in order to find the truth. So they've accepted this guy. Watch Ron Paul be sort of the Ralph Nader in 2012. Watch him garner enough electoral support from perhaps Barack Obama, but watch him turn out to be a spoiler in the 2012 election. He's already got the support of the truthers and some of the militia types, advocates a return to the gold standard. There isn't enough gold in the world to act as a medium of exchange, but keep an eye on him. And also Ron Paul has been sounding some themes that would resonate in the so-called progressive sector. This from the Raw Story blog, January 20th, 2010. Ron Paul, after CIA coup, agency, quote, runs the military, unquote. U.S. House Representative Ron Paul said the CIA has, in effect, carried out a coup against the U.S. government and the intelligence agency needs to be, quote, taken out, unquote. Speaking to an audience of like-minded libertarians at a Campaign for Liberty regional conference in Atlanta this past weekend, the Texas Republican said, quote, there's been a coup. Have you heard? It's the CIA coup. The CIA runs everything. They run the military. And it goes on like that. And, of course, the CIA is every bit as secretive as the Federal Reserve. Well, you know, the Federal Reserve isn't particularly secretive. They do a lot of not-so-good things. And the bailout of AIG, the full disclosures on that one aren't supposed to come out till 2018. I have no illusions about the Central Intelligence Agency, as I would think would be pretty clear at this point. But the CIA is not and never has been America's most powerful intelligence agency, and it's been downgraded considerably in the aftermath of September 11th. But with themes like this, keep an eye on Ron Paul and whatever chance Barack Obama may still have in 2012 if he isn't assassinated in one way or another. Well, we'll see how that one plays out. Interesting story. A venal right-wing talk show host in North Bergen, New Jersey, turns out to have been an FBI informant. This one is by Mike Kelly and Peter J. Sampson. Records show feds, this, by the way, is from the NorthJersey.com. Again, November 29th, 2009, full URL will be, this is by the Bergen Record, will be in the description for the show. They called him Valhalla, but it was more than a nickname. For more than 5 years, Hal Turner of North Bergen lived a double life. The public knew him as an ultra-right-wing radio talk show host and internet blogger with an audience of neo-Nazis and white supremacists attracted to his scorched-earth racism and bare-knuckles bashing of public figures. But to the FBI and its expanding domestic counterterror intelligence operations in the wake of the September 11th attacks, Turner was Valhalla, unquote, his code name as an informant who spied on his own controversial followers. Well, the use of informants is often, well, it's a tangled web, and sometimes informants or operatives turn double agents, rather like the guy who blew himself up in Afghanistan and killed a bunch of CIA officers. The use of informants also is something that the FBI uses them. In my opinion, they're not all that good at it. You got to be very careful. Developing human or human intelligence as opposed to electronic intelligence is extremely important. It also has been one of the American intelligence apparatus' great weaknesses over the years. So who knows about Hal Turner? Who knows which side he's really on? Is he really betraying his constituents, or ultimately will he be betraying the FBI and the dreaded federal government? I suspect that Andreas Strassmeyer might very well have been recruited as an informant to infiltrate the white supremacist movement and then doubled on his handlers. Andreas Strassmeyer connected to the Oklahoma City bombing. We've spoken about him in the past. Something is very interesting, though, skipping down in this to me. Later, he was sent undercover, Hal Turner, that is, he was sent undercover to Brazil, where he reported on a plot to send non-military supplies to anti-American Iraqi resistance fighters. Very interesting that he would be sent down to Brazil. I wonder if this was in the Three Corners area, where Islamists and organized crime factions, drug traffickers, and neo-Nazis and white supremacists all intermingle. Used to be an area for fugitive Nazi war criminals. There's a lot of activity coming out of there, and according to a Vanity Fair article that we accessed in For the Record programs 456 and 457, an Argentinian intelligence officer cited an Aryan Nations operative, a former Green Beret, who not only was of assistance to the AMIA bombers in Argentina, but who, according to this Argentine intelligence officer, provided hands-on support to Mohammed Atta and company in the September 11th attacks. In For the Record 456, among other broadcasts, I talk about the links between so-called neo-Nazis, I don't like that term, and white supremacists, and many of the terrorist incidents in this country involving, or terrorist incidents in this country and around the world involving Islamists. And again, do refer to the website. One of the things that's interesting about the whole counter-terror phenomenon is that it is inextricably linked with organized crime and drug trafficking. In some of our discussions, in fact, in most of our discussions with the heroic Daniel Hopsicker, we have focused on the airline through which Mohammed Atta and company infiltrated the U.S. for the September 11th attacks, and the fact that they were basically controlled drug routes. They obviously were in with some element of the intelligence community and the power structure, and that was one of the things that permitted the infiltration, the successful infiltration of Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shahi. Note that they were hanging out with Germans and Swiss and Austrians and others in South Florida. We've spoken about that in the past. Something that makes me pessimistic about the possibility of ever closing off those drug routes, and in the Nazi-tracked Serpent's Walk, America is destroyed by terrorist incidents using weapons of mass destruction that come in through the drug routes. Note the following, people may have heard of this, from The Guardian of the United Kingdom. This, in turn, is from The Observer. This is dated December 13th of 2009. Drug money saved banks in global crisis, claims UN advisor. Drug and crime chief says $352 billion in criminal proceeds was effectively laundered by financial institutions. Drug money worth billions of dollars kept the financial system afloat at the height of the global crisis, the United Nations drug and crime czar has told The Observer. Antonio Maria Costa, head of the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, said he has seen evidence that the proceeds of organized crime were, quote, the only liquid investment capital available to some banks on the brink of collapse last year. He said that a majority of the $352 billion of drug profits was absorbed into the economic system as a result. This will raise questions about crime's influence on the economic system at times of crisis. It will also prompt further examination of the banking sector as world leaders, including Barack Obama and Gordon Brown, call for new International Monetary Fund regulations. Can these drug networks be interdicted? That is anybody's guess, but we shall see. A very interesting article about the power of drug trafficking syndicates. This from the Washington Post of December 13th of 2009. It's an article by Steve Fenaro and William Booth. Mexico's drug cartels siphon liquid gold. Bold theft of $1 billion in oil resold in the United States has dealt a major blow to the Treasury. That would be the Mexican Treasury. So to give you an idea of how powerful these drug trafficking syndicates can be, drug traffickers employing high-tech drills, miles of rubber hose, and a fleet of stolen tanker trucks have siphoned more than $1 billion worth of oil from Mexico's pipelines over the past 2 years in a vast and audacious conspiracy that is bleeding the national treasury, according to U.S. and Mexican law enforcement officials and the state-run oil company. Using sophisticated smuggling networks, the traffickers have transported a portion of the pilfered petroleum across the border to sell to U.S. companies, some of which knew that it was stolen, according to court documents and interviews with American officials involved in an expanding investigation of oil service firms in Texas. Skipping down. Authorities say they have traced much of the oil rustling to the Zetas, a criminal organization founded by former military commandos. Although the Zetas initially served as a protection arm of the powerful Gulf cartel, they now call their own shots and dominate criminal enterprise in the oil states of Veracruz and Tamaulipas. The Zetas are a parallel government, says Eduardo Mendoza Arellano, a federal lawmaker who heads a National Committee on Energy. They practically own vast stretches of the pipelines from the highways to the very door of the oil companies, unquote. Skipping down, the Zetas often work with former Pemex employees, according to Ramon Pequeño Garcia, chief of anti-drug operations at Mexico's Public Security Ministry. Now, they bring it to the U.S. Guess who's been handling it on this side of things? Skipping down. Asked by U.S. District Judge Ewing Werlein Jr. how the condensate had been stolen from Pemex, Maldonado replied, quote, that's Arnaldo Maldonado, president of YN Gas Oil, who pleaded guilty to receiving about over $300,000 to coordinate delivery of some tankers. Again, beginning again. Asked by U.S. District Judge Ewing Werlein Jr. how the condensate had been stolen from Pemex, Maldonado replied, quote, I have no idea on that, sir, unquote. Donald Schroeder, a former president of Houston-based Tramo Petroleum, pleaded guilty in May to buying $2 million worth of stolen Mexican condensate, according to a transcript of the hearing. Schroeder resold the condensate to another company, BASF, for $150,000 profit, prosecutors told the court. A spokesman for BASF, which has not been implicated in the case, said the company was unaware that the material was stolen and is cooperating with the investigation. Well, BASF is one of the companies that grew out of the former IG Farben Nazi chemical cartel. And at a macro corporate level, so to speak, the links between the petroleum industry, in which the Underground Reich is centrally involved, and the pharmaceutical industry and other industries, because just about everything uses petroleum or its derivatives in one way or another, those connections are very profound indeed. So in that fascinating article, we see yet another link between the underground economy, in this case powerful drug traffickers, who are also siphoning off oil from the Mexican state-owned oil company, and they're selling it across the border in Texas, and once again, it's going into the quote, above-board economy, unquote, in this case, among other the recipients, an Underground Reich / IG Farben recipient, the BASF chemical company. And do note that corporate Germany is controlled by the what I call the Underground Reich and the Bormann Capital Network. There's a lot more to discuss. Got plenty of miscellaneous articles and updates, all sorts of fascinating things. But we are fast running out of time here, so perhaps I'll stick a few more in the description. But please note, as always, that the SpitfireList.com website contains long article-length descriptions of these programs. If I'm going a little too fast or some of this sounds a little strange or you want to know the sourcing, please use the website. SpitfireList.com is the best website for information of this kind, now with a new, updated, expanded front page, and there's a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. And if you don't like what you see, there's no better way of fighting back than supporting the work that I'm doing. This, however, concludes this bit of work. This concludes side two of For the Record program number 702, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This program is being recorded on January 23rd of the year 2010. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.